Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. This week's podcast includes a special discussion with Jeff Smesrud, co-founder and president of insurance services at healthcare.com and founder of healthcare.com's Pivot Health. He and NAHU's Vice President of Government Affairs, Marcy Buckner, will discuss the impact of the short-term plan final rule as it takes effect, how it may impact marketplace plans, the nuances of state regulation of these plans, and which consumers may benefit the most. Before we begin, as a reminder, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and to rate us. The podcast is posted every Friday on these platforms ahead of being distributed through NAHU's member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. This week, we are excited to welcome Jeff Smesrud, co-founder of healthcare.com and founder of Pivot Health. Jeff has a storied career in the health insurance business, having started and grown several into multi-million-dollar profitable and scalable entities. Previously, Jeff helped create and grow the fully insured segment at the IHC Group to nearly $300 million in revenue in 7 years. Notably, Jeff is a cancer survivor, charity activist, motivational speaker, and as an active marathon runner, he is one of only roughly 200 individuals to complete a marathon on all 7 continents. Welcome, Jeff, and thank you for joining us today. I'll now turn it over to NAHU's Marcy Buckner, who can tell us about the big whoop of the week for the Washington Update podcast.
This week's big whoop is the Senate considering a congressional review of the short-term plan final rule. This coming just days after short-term plans under the new final regulation were eligible to be sold. The Senate voted 50-50 on whether to take up this congressional review, and so the motion ultimately failed, and short-term plans will be upheld under the final rule that was released in August. In light of this news, Jeff, let's get started talking about short-term plans. Jeff, tell us about yourself, your involvement in the health insurance market, how your passion has shaped this market, and the role you think your organization will play in the future of health insurance coverage.
Well, Marcy, first of all, thank you and NAHU for allowing me to participate in this Happy Hour podcast. Been involved in NAHU many years and think it's a tremendous organization. I grew up in this business. My dad was a health insurance agent in a small town in Minnesota. He is recently celebrating his 65th year licensed life and health agent. And I used to, you know, travel with him when I was a kid. And I think by the age of about 13 or 14, I was making calls for him to help set appointments. So I've always been around it. You know, like any kid, you don't dream of growing up to be an insurance agent, you know, firefighter, policeman, you know, save the world, political activist. But it was kind of in my blood, and I've always been around it and have built a number of insurance agencies over the years, helped grow the fully insured business for the IHC Group from zero to about $300 million. Before I left there a few years ago when I turned 55, wanted to get back into building and starting companies from scratch. We've done that, launched a company called healthcare.com, also started Pivot Health, which markets short-term medical and other types of products. You know, my passion in this industry, it does go back a little bit to my dad. When he would sit down with clients, he'd always write the word HELP in the corner of a notepad, which stood for Health, Education, Loved Ones, Plans. And he talked to his customers about what their plans are, how health insurance could fit in that solution, about different types of financial products, and always try to package and position what was really, really best for his customers. And over the years, I've thought as technology plays a role, an increasing role in everything we do in life, and everything is on our device, you know, how can we take that knowledge and expertise and use technology, you know, not to replace trusted advisors and brokers and agents, but to assist them, to help them do their job better. So that's been my passion, particularly in the last few years, is how to make technology work for consumers and how to make technology work for advisors.
That's great. And I love how you focus, or how you said your father also focused on the looking at loved ones and the way that the plans can affect them. NEHU has always said that health insurance is more than just health insurance. It's also a financial protection for yourself and your loved ones. So it sounds like your family has recognized that throughout their business.
Absolutely. It's an important component of, you know, financial planning. And that's where, you know, the changes, the affordability issues of health insurance become very, very important. And short-term medical, you know, has a place in that decision-making tree. It's a type of health insurance that fits some of the people, some of the time, for some reasons, but not all of the people, and not for permanent reasons.
Right, exactly. And so the short-term limited duration insurance final rule was released in August, and last week was the implementation date for the rule, meaning it was when plans could start selling STPs that were 364 days in length and able to be renewed, depending on the carrier's discretion, for up to 36 months. Before we get into the specifics of how STPs can be designed now, can you give us a background on how STPs have developed over the past few decades?
Well, that's a great question. Short-term plans have been around for 30 plus years, and they've been regulated by the states, each state taking slightly different views and some modifications. Most comply with, you know, NAIC models. Short-term medical has always been for gaps in coverage, the 90 days before an employer health plan starts, for students at college, for students coming off parents' plans, for people who are being in a divorce, for people who are temporarily moving to a different location. There's just a variety of reasons that short-term medical has always been a small niche product. About 30 states had allowed plans to go 364 days. Five states, New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and now California, won't allow any type of short-term medical plans. But they've been an effective part of planning for brokers and agents and consumers for 30 plus years. The new rules, it'll still be governed by the states. So some states will allow 364-day plans. And you're right, some carriers may allow an extension of coverage for an additional 2 years. Those types of plans, however, are going to be more expensive. The longer the duration of coverage, the more expensive an insurance product would be. A perfect example is, you know, a 5-year term life policy is a lot less expensive than a 15-year or a 30-year. So a 3-month short-term medical plan is going to be less expensive than a 3-year short-term plan.
And you touched on some of the state roles in these plans, but first, let's talk about the individual market overall in the country. With the lengthening of the term for STPs from 3 to 12 months and the extended duration of up to 36 months, many stakeholders cautioned the Trump administration on how this would affect the individual market. Many, including NEHU, submitted comments explaining that this new option may take young, healthy individuals out of the individual market, causing those premiums to rise. Do you share that same concern?
I struggle sometimes with the math that it would have any real profound impact on rates by allowing younger, healthy people to buy short-term medical. The entire individual major medical market is about a $60 billion market, and short-term medical has been roughly a $1 billion market. So I think it sometimes gets overstated that it could erode the risk pool for the ACA. The ACA has a number of things that have eroded the risk pool over the years. Short-term medical, you know, has to continue to be looked at as not permanent insurance. It shouldn't be looked at as a permanent solution for somebody. But there are individuals who find that they can't afford an ACA plan. They understand that the benefits in a short-term plan are not as good. They understand it's not qualified coverage. They understand there's no longer a mandate or penalty for not having an ACA plan. And they come to a conclusion that, you know, they simply can't afford coverage for some period of time. And as advisors, you know, that becomes a very complicated question. If your client says, my health insurance premiums went up 25%, I need to do something. And in the context of all that is, you know, they're paying for long-term care insurance, or they're paying for life insurance, or they're paying for disability insurance. And what's the best advice for, you know, a trusted advisor to give? You know, sometimes it may be, have you thought about a short-term medical for some period of time, and then let us kind of punt and regroup in 6 to 9 months. So the flexibility creates more opportunity, but I don't think it should be positioned as permanent insurance. And I think 36-month plans, except in certain niche situations, such as those turning 62 or 63 or trying to bridge their way to Medicare, may not be the right solution for most consumers.
Yes, and that's definitely something that NEHU agrees with, that it's not right for everyone, but for some people, it is the right fit for. And just like we were talking about, not everyone is eligible to enroll in an STP, which will help to ease some of those who were concerned about those changes that STPs may negatively affect the individual market. But what are the qualifications for someone to enroll in an STP? And what type of consumer would typically enroll in one of these plans? You touched on it a little bit earlier, but can you talk about that again?
Well, first of all, short-term medical plans, with one or two exceptions, are not guaranteed issue. And that means that people with a significant precondition are not going to be eligible for coverage. And also people who have been treated in the last 3 to 5 years for heart issues, stroke, cancer, a number of those types of things aren't going to be approved. Sometimes critics in the media take that a little too far to say, gosh, if you had acne as a child, you're not going to be eligible for a short-term medical plan because that's a pre-existing condition. So I think you have to filter through to get to the facts, but you do have to be in relatively good health, and some amount of pre-existing conditions are not going to be covered. But what type of consumer? Consumers that are going through changes for some period of time, consumers who may not be able to afford an ACA plan for a period of time. And then the other thing that I think our industry needs to get its arms around is we are increasingly living in a gig economy. Some 50 million people work a variety of temporary jobs. They're Uber drivers, they're opera singers part-time. They are involved in lots of temporary gigs that are part of their lifestyle. And for those people, nothing is really permanent in terms of where they plan to live, what they plan to do long term. So I think insurance has to recognize that the economy is changing.
Right. And I think that's what we saw a little bit in the association health plan rule as well, letting those sole proprietors and individuals into the association health plans through that rule. But then getting back to the STPs, since the type of individual enrolling in an STP is different than consumers that typically enroll in individual coverage, like you were talking about, what type of consumer protections are in place to ensure that the consumer is aware that these plans are different before enrolling into either type of plan?
Well, there needs to be very good disclosures that a short-term medical plan is not qualified health coverage under the Affordable Care Act. It does not meet the 10 essential benefits. It does not cover most significant pre-existing medical conditions. And at the end of the term, whatever that term might be, 6 months, 9 months, 36 months, 364 days, at the end of that term, you may not be eligible for another short-term medical plan. So I think good disclosures are absolutely essential. We do that at Pivot Health. We let people know exactly what it is they're buying. And I think any good agent, 99% of the agents out there and 100% of all your members, do the right thing and never let consumers think that this is permanent coverage or this meets all the standards of the Affordable Care Act.
Absolutely. This was one of the areas that was kind of beefed up a little bit between the proposed rule and the final rule based on what type of disclosures were required for the consumers. And we were really happy to see that extra disclosure requirement just to really make sure that consumers were aware that, like you said, this isn't major medical.
Yeah. And, you know, we at Pivot Health, I think we do a lot online and also quite a bit with brokers and advisors. I think there's three different sign-offs. And for those who are still talking to people across the kitchen table, you know, it doesn't hurt to get another note from the consumer that says, hey, you've explained this absolutely to me.
Right. And there are not only individual limitations for enrolling in a short-term plan, but there are many differences amongst the states that you alluded to earlier. States are not preempted by the federal law from limiting short-term plans to a shorter time frame than what was in the August final rule, or from banning SDPs altogether. What is the role of the state departments of insurance in overseeing short-term plans? You mentioned some states that banned the SDPs prior to the final rule. Do you expect any more states to ban them in the future? Or do you expect any other type of state action that could be taken other than shortening the timeframe or banning SDPs altogether?
I believe that states do a relatively good job overseeing short-term medical, and short-term medical plans are governed by state insurance departments. I don't believe there's going to be more states taking significant turns to limit or ban short-term medical. California did. That was expected. New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, I believe Rhode Island, perhaps Vermont have never allowed that. You're seeing a lot of small tweaks at state level that agents and brokers, you know, need to be aware of. Iowa, for example, limited short-term medical plans to 90 days unless it covers pre-existing conditions. And then you could have a short-term plan for a longer period of time. Minnesota limits it to 6 months. A couple of states say 6 months and then a 60-day gap in coverage. So it's really important for brokers and advisors to understand the nuances in their state laws. Coverage nuances also take place, and those change from time to time where certain illnesses need to be covered at a certain level and in one state, but not in another state. I've talked to our staff about trying to publish the latest footprint of what states allow in terms of short-term medical. And there's a little bit of difficulty in that. Certain short-term medical plans are filed as individual products in the state. Other short-term medical plans are filed as association group products. And you get into a little bit of an interpretation if you have an Illinois domiciled association and Illinois allows 6 months or 364 days. Does that mean in Oregon you can only offer it to an Oregon resident for 90 days? You know, the conservative interpretation is you can only offer it for 90 days in Oregon, but there are carriers that take a slightly different view on that.
Yes, we can't emphasize more how important it is to check not just with the federal law, but also with the state laws in your area about short-term plans when you're working with consumers.
It's the most important thing is to get people the right coverage for the right reasons.
We've talked a lot about how the new rule could impact the individual market, but we have received some questions about how this could affect the employer market. In light of the QCERA or quasi-HRA rule, it's gotten a lot of different nicknames, from 2017, which allowed qualified small employers to provide funds towards the purchase of HRA plans in the individual market, is the same applicable for STPs? So in other words, can employers provide employees with funds specifically towards the purchase of short-term medical plans?
That's a very good question, and one in which you might get different answers from different people. My understanding and what we tell our advisors is that a short-term plan cannot be used with a QCERA because the QCERA is for qualified health plans and short-term plans are outside the definition of that. Now, I've seen some creative thinking out there that says, well, a faith-based plan is not insurance, so a faith-based plan could be part of a QCERA. And if you have some minimal essential coverage, then you could do a short-term medical plan. You know, sometimes those interpretations pass muster. I tend to take the more conservative approach. I don't see that it's clearly indicated that a short-term plan would meet the requirements of QCERA. And therefore, if it's not clear, I tend to be conservative. And that would be my advice.
And we agree with that. We also tend to be very conservative in reviewing these types of questions and agree that the SDPs do not meet the requirements for the QCERA. So our listeners are getting the same advice from both of us, which is good.
Yeah, but, you know, there is legislation. There are, well, probably Republicans and Democrats, but more Republicans that are looking at making a number of tweaks to health laws, including the possibility of changing a definition of short-term medical, including the possibility of combining an HSA with a short-term plan, broadening the definitions of QCERA. Will that move forward? Well, that's possible depending on who controls Congress, but I don't expect any dramatic changes anytime soon.
That's good for our folks to hear as far as planning purposes. It's always seems like things are changing so quickly. Speaking of changes, what about renewability for short-term plans? I know that's a broad question, but our members have a number of concerns about renewals. So I'll kind of take them one at a time. The first one is, if an individual is staying with the same carrier, will the carrier be able to rate up upon renewability after 12 months?
There shouldn't be rate ups, meaning that a consumer is penalized for recent use of their health plan because of their changed health status. But there certainly could be rate increases by age, for example, or if an entire block of business has its rates raised 10 to 15%. But, you know, different carriers may approach this differently. And advisors need to know that. For the most part, a short-term plan pays a level commission during the duration of that period of time, whether it's for 90 days or 364 days or possibly up to 3 years. And then it's a brand new policy. And it's important to think of it as a brand new policy. It is a term policy. It has a term date on it. And then individuals, depending on their health status, can apply for a new policy. It's an important distinction to think about term ending, starting new policy.
And the final rule was very clear in that, talking about the difference between the 12-month term and the 36-month duration, which I thought was very interesting in the way that they kept kind of repeating that. And I'm going to ask almost the same question again, just with different terms, just because of the way that we've been asked this question, to make sure that we're kind of focusing in on some of those buzzwords that stick out to our members. So will the renewal be subject to underwriting and any pre-existing conditions that may have been diagnosed during the previous term? I know you said they can't rate up for use, although they can take age into account. So what about underwriting and pre-existing conditions?
That might be a carrier by carrier solution. For example, at Pivot Health, when it was limited to 90 days, we allowed people to apply for 4 90-day plans at the same time and offered a rider to our plans that said any pre-existing conditions that occurred in the last 90 days wouldn't deny somebody the right to have a new policy for the next 90 days. So we took a position that was kind of pro-consumer. You can purchase multiple short-term medical plans and not have pre-existing conditions disallow you from having additional coverage, provided that you met the qualifications for the first plan. Different carriers are going to look at that in different ways. And it's really important for people to understand that short-term medical plans do not renew. They are new policies. And with a new policy, things like deductibles, lifetime maximums, period maximums, all start all over again. There's no such thing as a 3-year short-term medical plan that has one $5,000 deductible that covers you for 36 months. I don't believe there's such a plan out there, and I question whether that could exist.
No, I like the way that you're explaining that it's not a renewal. It's the end of that term and the beginning of another one. And so I think you touched on a little bit of this just now with the previous question, but how will enforcement of the 12-month term and 36-month duration work if an individual has been enrolled with different carriers?
Well, an individual could buy a plan through Pivot Health for 364 days. And if we chose not to, you know, offer a continuation, they could buy a plan from another carrier for 364 days. There are a few states that say there has to be some break in coverage. I believe Michigan, Arizona, Idaho. I'm not 100% sure on those states where they say you can buy a short-term plan for whatever duration is allowed in the state, but there must be a gap in coverage of either 60 days or 3 days, that type of thing. But the enforcement of that is going to be, and it's going to be important to understand these are term policies for a set duration. And I think states are going to be very rigid in making sure consumers are protected in that way.
And we discussed earlier what type of consumer would typically enroll in a short-term plan. Typically someone between employment, like you said, possibly experiencing a divorce or some type of short-term change in life circumstances, or waiting for open enrollment to begin. But what about those that enroll in an STP and find themselves at the end of the STP's term? Does the expiration of the short-term plan trigger a qualifying event for either an individual or group special enrollment period?
The end of a short-term medical, I do not believe, would trigger a qualifying event. A consumer tip, or a tip for brokers and advisors, may be to sync up the end date of your short-term medical to the beginning date of an open enrollment period. Therefore, your consumer, your customer, is always guaranteed to have an option to move off of a short-term medical plan and onto an ACA plan because the end dates are all synced to the open enrollment period. That may sound like, well, it helps consumers because it gives them more options and choices. That may seem to some to be a way to only put people with health problems into the ACA. I don't look at it that way. I look at it as our role is to give our customers maximum amount of protection and advice that works for them. But let me give you an example of why I love this industry and why I think short-term medical is a nice plan. We had an agent down in Texas who's been working with a consumer for many years, been the local insurance agent for that individual. He was in an ACA plan, changing his family status. His income was such that he didn't qualify for a subsidy, did not want to go uninsured because he had two young kids. So bought a short-term medical plan from us, and 30 days later, his 16-year-old was diagnosed with leukemia, and after a $5,000 deductible, we are paying 100% of the $270,000 chemotherapy treatment. And that's exactly what we should do. I think the agent did exactly the right thing to work with his client to say, you're stretched financially, you're in a changed circumstance, we need to get you something, you don't want to be uninsured. And I think my team, we did our job. Our job is to pay the bills. That's what insurance is for.
Right. And I like how you really focus there on, you know, it's the responsible thing to do for your client, for the consumer, to make sure that term ends around open enrollment so that, or during open enrollment, really, so that they have that opportunity, if the time is right, to go ahead and get into a major medical. And if the timing isn't right, they can make another decision, possibly for short-term medical or for something else that fits their needs.
Well, our job is to help consumers. That's why they look to us as trusted advisors. We give them options and choices, and we help them make decisions that are good for them. Our job is not necessarily public policy, although we should influence it.
Yes, and I can't think of a better statement to end this conversation with. That is absolutely our job, is to help the consumer and be an advocate for them, both with finding the appropriate plan for them and then advocating with policy change as well to help them and the consumer's needs. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for your time, and best wishes to you folks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Marcy, it's now time for the NHU Healthcare Happy Hours Toast of the Week. What are we toasting to?
This week, we are toasting to Pam Mitroff. After 25 years as an NEHU member and several years on NEHU's staff, Pam is retiring as our Senior Director of Health Reform Compliance. We wish you the best, Pam.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for this week's installment of the NEHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts, or to join as a member of NAHU, visit nahu.org.